Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 295 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. Today, my guest is Jeremy Baker. And Jeremy is a construction law attorney in Chicago who, quite frankly, has said to me that The Law Entrepreneur was instrumental in him deciding to leave big law and start his own practice, and has found that to be a very rewarding transition. And, you know, he's kind enough to say that it wouldn't have been possible had he not been a devout listener to the program. So I thank all my previous guests for making that possible for Jeremy, because they add far more than I do to the process. But it's great to chat with him and to see what his perspectives are and what his challenges are when he went, you know, very specific practice area, construction law, that is really kind of challenging to find folks who can do what you do in that space. And so it's a real effort for him to scale this practice of his, and hopefully we'll get some insight as to how he's approaching the challenge. So without any further delay, here is Jeremy Baker. Jeremy Baker, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I am delighted to have you with us today, Jeremy. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, I've been a lawyer for 19 years now, Neil. Nearly 17 of them in big law, AmLaw 100 and AmLaw 200 firms, you know, hundreds of lawyers. But I'm in my third year of running my own firm here in Chicago. And I got to tell you that never in my wildest dreams, as recently as 4 years ago, would I have thought that I'd be here. I really loved my last job, great firm, great people. I was there for 14 years, but I'm really thrilled to be out of my own today.
Well, what was the impetus for you making that decision? I mean, if you're having a great time and making good money and you loved what you were doing, what was the attraction to throwing that all away and walking off the plank?
Well, you know, it was kind of an accident, because I wasn't trying to leave. I didn't have any desire to leave, but it was four Thanksgivings ago, just about 4 years ago. I was waiting at the car wash, killing time, looking at my iPhone, and I stumbled on the Purple Podcast app, and I came across shows like yours and really fell down the rabbit hole. I was fascinated to learn that there were people who were thinking about self-improvement and systems and technology the way that, you know, you and your guests do. And it occurred to me that I might be able to learn something from there to help my wife out, who's been a solo estate planning attorney for 11 years now. Mm-hmm. And that's where it all started.
Well, and then so you thought, well, maybe I'll learn something to help my wife. But somewhere along the way, hey, I can also help myself. This might be something I want to do.
That's right. You know, at first I thought this is just fascinating and let's see if I can make my wife a little more efficient and profitable. And it was interesting, just rolling out two or three tweaks to our business really improved it. But I went through a process where it was, you know, this isn't for me to, well, actually, maybe I could, you know, take some of these lessons and apply them to my practice. But I don't really want to, because I don't need to. And then it became, well, maybe I should reconsider that. And then it became, no, this really could change my life. You know, do I really want to do this? I absolutely have to do this. So it was a slow progression that played out over a few hundred podcast episodes that I listened to over a year or so.
Well, you know, I think it's really kind of interesting that probably the biggest hurdle I think you would have to navigate, or the thing that's fraught with the most opportunity for danger, is bringing home some ideas to your wife's practice. <laughs> You know? <laughs> And then, oh my God, what a brave soul this guy is. Hey, honey, you should change your practice. I listen to this podcast. You should do this.
Yes.
How did that conversation go?
You know, my wife is wonderful and very open-minded, and we started very small. But, you know, if you really were to look at where she was spending her time, so much of it was emailing about when can I speak to, you know, you and your spouse. You know, that might have been half of her time. So even just using a calendaring app probably cut down the amount of time that she was spending in her business, you know, by a tremendous amount. And so when we started to make some of those small tweaks like that, it became, you know, obvious to her that this was going to be a good thing. And so she was really enthusiastic about it.
That's great. And then, so then you get bit by the bug and you come to the conclusion, well, two of us can do this. I can create my own solo practice myself. Were you thinking at the time, I'm going to do the same kind of law in the same way? Or were you thinking that there's a little slightly different nuance to the application of what I do that I would like to explore as a solo? Or what was your thinking along those lines?
More and more as I practice as a solo, I'm realizing that I am going to have to change the way that I practice. And it's sort of a labor of love. I'm spending quite a lot of time these days thinking about what that might look like. But when I came out of the gate, I was thinking that I'm going to do the exact same sort of law. I'm just going to do it on my own. You know, I'm a construction lawyer. I help people create buildings. It's all that I've done. And, you know, I've taught this at the law school level in Chicago. And so I'm kind of not going back or doing anything a different substantively with the rest of my career, but the way that I deliver the work is something that I'm giving quite a lot of thought to.
Well, what's the market reception to that kind of shift? I'm just guessing that in a place like Chicago, and you're dealing with multi-million dollar, if not billion dollar construction projects, Is there a bias to big law? And if so, how did they feel about working with a solo practitioner?
That was one of the real million-dollar questions I was wondering when I took the leap. You know, the first thing that I was most focused on was getting out of my former job on good terms, and that went remarkably smoothly. And then as soon as I was out, the question was client acquisition.
Right.
Because I wasn't sure how people would feel about that. But, you know, I've made a lot of friends over my, you know, two decades of doing this in Chicago, and the reception from those people and a lot of others that I've connected with through social media and other channels has been outstanding. And so client acquisition has not been an issue.
Good. That's great. Cause, I'm gathering or guessing again, this is what I do. I just, you know, leap to a conclusion without any without any evidence. I'm guessing that in your practice area, big law is not likely to say, "Hey, yeah, good luck. Take all your clients with you." Okay.
Yeah, you know, it was a big question in my mind because I was in my last job for 14 years and it was a great one that I was really happy with. And when I said that I was going to leave, I wasn't sure what the reception would be, but, you know, they threw me a party and they, you know, baked me a little hard hat construction hat cookies that said, "Good luck, Jeremy." And so that there was no acrimony at all. And, you know, my mentors who I worked with for so long are people that I, you know, I've texted with as recently as a few days ago. So I continue to be very close with them, and that was wonderful.
Well, that's awesome. So now when you started on your own, let's kind of go through the process. I'm gathering again that this is not the kind of thing that typically you can do from the kitchen table.
Yeah, it is a little bit different. I grabbed some office space and I built out a lot of systems to try to replace some of the administrative help that I was so used to at the large law firm. But that's what's amazing, Neil, is if I had tried to do this 10 years ago, I don't think I could pull it off. But with all of the, you know, SaaS-based technology, you know, different programs sharing data through APIs, the ability to connect with people through, you know, different channels, social media being a big one, we're in a different world now. And if I could send one message to people who might be considering a leap similar to the one that I made, it's that you could do it. You know, it's not as hard as you think. I don't think it's for everybody, but it didn't turn out to be as hard as I thought it would be. It's not to say that I don't have plenty of challenges, but the things that I was worried about as I was kind of peering over the precipice didn't turn out to be such significant obstacles.
Well, that is true. I mean, particularly in the last 5 years, maybe going back as many as 10 years, the tools that we have to facilitate a transition like that are unparalleled. I mean, there's a lot, not only do you have really good ones, but you got a lot of really good ones, and you have choices that you can avail yourself. And that wasn't the case. I mean, when I started, there was no such thing as the cloud. So just that in and of itself, the idea that now most applications, most services are delivered through a cloud-based mechanism, it certainly does make things demonstrably easier. Now that again doesn't create clients, it doesn't create good work, it doesn't create great reviews, but it does make some of the technical aspects of it a lot easier.
Yeah, I remember the first time when I started shopping for practice management software, I was blown away. And I realized that I can track my conflicts. I can keep track of a few hundred matters. I can do my billing. I can do all of the things that I was relying on people to do to a great extent in the large law firm myself. And I remember thinking, what does this cost? $1,000 a month or something like that? And when I found out that I was way off and it's much, much more affordable, I was blown away.
So who did you end up landing with?
I use Clio and, you know, it's been great for me. I think I probably would be equally happy with a bunch of other practice management solutions, but I didn't want to spend a lot of time dawdling over the choice, and Clio seemed to do what I needed, and I picked it and I never looked back.
Yeah, I continue to be a strong advocate for Clio. I switched over from Daylight to Clio, although I still maintain Daylight for a lot of other reasons. Still use it extensively. Just generated my whole Christmas list out of my Daylight database, which is something that Clio doesn't really do a very good job of. So I actually am operating on both platforms. But you know, for somebody I think that who's getting started in all-inclusive practice management software such as Clio, Practice Panther, Smokeball, a bunch of others, you know, you just got to pick one, the one that resonates the best with you, and then work the heck out of it. Because most of us, and I think you've probably heard that us mention this on the podcast before, most of us only scratch the surface of the capabilities of the tools that we have.
There's no question that that's true for me. And, you know, the working in your business versus working on your business dilemma is something that's very real for me. I still have a list of things that I wanted to roll out after listening to the Clio Cloud Conference from last year.
Right.
That never got done.
Exactly. And that was just, they just held theirs, 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
This year. Yeah.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, as we sit here and record this in early November. So what you said your life has been dramatically affected by this decision. I hope it's in a good way. What are some of the things that changed after you made the decision to go ahead and open your own practice?
Well, it was a different way of dealing with some of the challenges that I think we all face as lawyers. So I would guess that no matter whether you're a first year lawyer or at the very end of your career, whether you work for the government or in private practice, big firm, small firm, you know, everybody's bumping up against limitations on their time, their bandwidth, you know, wanting to, you know, have a progressive earning opportunity. And so I think everybody's kind of peering around trying to figure out, how can I get more clients? How can I get different kinds of work? How can I get better kinds of work? And, you know, at the big firm, I was very focused on client acquisition. I was doing tons of speaking and writing and lots of extracurricular activities, trying to move the needle. And when you're swinging a very, you know, high hourly rate and there's a lot of competition, it can be a real challenge. But when I was able to take myself into a different environment, different billing rates, different billable expectations on myself, able to free up time and giving myself permission to go out in the world with video, newsletter, and all of those things, I was able to kind of solve the problem of trying to attract positive attention, to grow, to get more clients in a different way. So I kind of stopped playing the game that I had been playing, which has a very high degree of difficulty, and started to play a different game, which I found to be, in many respects, a lot easier.
Yeah, a little different application of the skill set that you had in presentation in a different way, with hopefully the same objective.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works, and we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and it's changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity, with quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. So clearly it isn't all peaches and cream. There has to be challenges that still remain. What are a couple of the big challenges that you're trying to overcome these days?
Well, I think that's, you know, one is certainly is trying to grow. You know, I'm not trying to create a job for myself where I'm just going to, you know, work and be busy. I'd like to scale the firm up. And so that means more people. And, you know, as you hire and as you try to scale, I'm a big believer in implementing processes so the firm can, you know, run in a standard way. It can be a bit of a challenge, I think, to do certain practice areas like mine, where you're trying to create processes for producing the work. You know, of course, a process for hiring, a process for getting videos edited and checking conflicts, it's the same for me as anybody else. But the work that I do is typically done by bunches of lawyers that huddle together, you know, and sort of share their collective knowledge and, you know, pump out the work. It's generally not done by a system where you try to create a process where you can bring in new people and hopefully have them run the process. So hiring, scaling, and then creating these processes for generating the substantive work is really what I'm focused on these days.
Yeah, I think it's the substantive legal work that is the biggest challenge for, you know, for people in certain practice areas, such as the one that you're dealing with. For others, you know, there are ways to address certain aspects of the substantive work. Like, for example, in a family law practice, a significant part of family law litigation involves discovery and getting all that data and responding to interrogatories and document requests and reviewing them. Well, you can set up systems that involve other people to assist you with that and take that substantive aspect of the legal work off your plate so that you can focus on some of the more concrete and more specific decision-making that has to go in place. That isn't always true for other types of practice areas, such as I'm gathering, such as yours.
Well, that's what I'm wrestling with, Neil, because I have a ton of respect for a number of law firm owners that I hang with who are running these amazing practices that are scalable and running like clockwork, and they are achieving levels of personal and financial freedom that are, you know, remain elusive for me. And they seem to think that I can systematize to a great extent. And, you know, I have so much respect for them that it's not easy for me to write off the fact that they might be onto something and maybe I'm just being a little bit dense. So I'm certainly looking to try mm-hmm. to understand what I can do to have a repeatable system. I think that if I was to throw overboard 95% of the work that I do and really focus on 5% and try to create a repeatable system, it would be easy to do. But that sounds like a heck of a risk, you know, given the fact that I've generated clients over the years who expect me to help them with the other 95%. Yeah. And for a variety of reasons, I'm reluctant to say goodbye to those people and what I do for them.
Well, again, it might be for in your situation that the key to growth is adding staff. You know, for some people, the key to growth is being able to scale the model through the use of technology and repeatable processes and systems. And that has a role, that has its function. But in other cases, the pathway to growth is with more attorneys. Now, I think the challenge for you will be what kind of attorneys. If I decide to go in that direction, am I talking about contract attorneys to start with? Or am I talking mm-hmm. about attorneys that work virtually at some point? Or am I talking about, no, I need somebody in the office with me because that's how our business is done. So I think that can be a challenge.
Yeah, it's something I'm giving a lot of thought to, Neil. You know, being a construction lawyer, it's a really niche practice area. I don't have any data, but I've just said over the years that maybe there's 100 or 1,000 real estate lawyers for every one construction lawyer. And there might really only be 150 or so people in Chicago that do what I do at a high level. I know all of their names. And, you know, there's a half dozen or a dozen people who I would love to join me. These are people I've known for a very mm-hmm. long time. I'm doing my very best to convince them to join me. You know, some of them are a little reluctant to make the entrepreneurial leap. And so I'm looking for other solutions. You know, I did hire an associate who was with me for 6 months and we parted ways 2 weeks ago. You know, that was a learning experience to try to find somebody who wasn't within that group of 200 people, but I'm not giving up and I'm interviewing for staff and attorney positions and entertaining the possibility of using some 1099, you know, contract attorneys who are very experienced lawyers that are maybe a decade or two more deeper into their career than me. And so I'm thinking about anything that I can do, from hiring the people that I know to, you know, trying to use contract attorneys who know more than me, to creating systems to bring in new people to allow them to sort of train themselves on the substantive work. And it's a challenge, but it's a joy, and it's what I'm wrestling with these days.
Well, it is a challenge. There's no question about that. I'm not sure that's always a joy from my own experience. So you touched on staffing there a little bit. You did have an associate at some point in time. Are you using other virtual support or services to help round out the experience?
Absolutely. I've got a wide variety of different companies helping me out. A branding company with my website and social media. I've got people who help optimize my website for SEO. My phones are answered by a call center. My bookkeeping is done remotely by a great service. And I could probably think of a half dozen other places I'm looking to for help. But, you know, I need more. And I think that maybe the thing that I need more than anything else is a full-time project manager, office manager type person to sit next to me, you know, in the office and to do all of the working on the business that I just don't have the time to do these days.
Yeah. So maybe a solution is either a fractional or something more than fractional chief operating officer, or, you know, you could start off as office manager with the idea of moving up to, you know, a C-suite type experience. But yeah, I mean, you see that more and more with companies where the principal attorney is, you know, really focused on the work at hand and really needs an office manager, an operations manager.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I've toyed with the ideas of using virtual assistants, and I haven't gone down that path just yet. But I do have a part-time office manager who's a full-time law student who helps me with invoicing and things like that. Sure. And it's been wonderful. Yeah. It's freed up a day or two of my month. But I think that, you know, I need somebody here to make sure that I'm not losing two or three billable hours a day to administrative type things that I could hire somebody else to help me with.
Yeah, well, even moreover than that, I'm suggesting that somebody who takes over the entire operational aspect of the growth of your firm might be something to look at down the road, or even sooner than that, because that would then run all those other systems for you so that you can focus on what you do best.
Well, that's the magic of the podcast world, Neil, because every morning I wake up and I see, you know, of the dozen or two podcasts that I listen to frequently, you know, what's waiting for me that morning. And, you know, I knew nothing about how to launch your own firm. And, you know, I think that there's still a lot more out there that I don't know than I do, but it's constant learning. And it's really invigorating for me to think about things like what you just suggested.
Yeah. Well, somebody that I spoke to recently, talking about my own situation, said, you know, I think you need a personal assistant for you. not necessarily so much for your varied business interests, but you need to keep your brain straight. You need a personal assistant to help you. And I thought, you know, that's not a bad idea. Because it's not directly business related. It doesn't result in a change to the bottom line of my law practice or to the podcast, but I can certainly see how it would help my mindset a little easier, you know?
Well, I'm with you. And I've had that thought myself. You know, my wife and I, in addition to having our law practices, we've got four kids and the oldest one just turned 11. And
Okay. Well, definitely. Glutton for punishment on top of it, right?
Well, you know, but it's been wonderful to have a lot more freedom. You know,
but I was going to tell you, when that 11-year-old gets to be what, 16, 17, and then you've got the rest of them are spread out down to what, 12? What's the spread on your kids? Like five years?
Yeah, it's a 6-year-old is the youngest and 11-year-old is the oldest, right?
Yeah, it's going to get worse, Jeremy. I don't want to pop your balloon here, but I can just tell you that the time demands they grow exponentially.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do my own thing. You know, sure. As much as I like my other job, I felt like I was flying to LaGuardia and, you know, in the airport as much as I was, you know, for work, helping other people's clients, as much as I was hanging out with my kids, you know, on the side of the baseball game. And so it's been very liberating for me to be able to reimagine how I practice law.
For sure. For sure. Well, listen, Jeremy, it's been great catching up with you. I wish you the best of luck. I'm glad that we were able to play a small part in your success. I hope that continues to be the case. I hope we can continue to bring smart folks to this program that can help shape yours and other attorneys' practices into that they want it to be. And so tell our audience a little bit how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you had to offer today.
Well, you can reach me through my website, which is www.buildchicagolaw.com, or my side gig, www.operationpalmtree.com, which is a lark that my wife and I launched to try to help provide encouragement and support for people who are interested in leaving big law and starting their own firms.
Operation Palm Tree?
Operationpalmtree.com.
Well, that's interesting. Okay, we'll have that in our show notes and we'll encourage folks to check it out. And I wish you and your wife the best going forward. And I love Chicago, so I'd love to get out there and visit with you.
It would be great to meet you in person, Neil. And thanks so much for the generous work that you do.
Thanks so much for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur. Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionist. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.